Okay, I think that's all the initial formality that I'm supposed to do. I'm checking for badges. Everybody has a badge? Okay, great. And sir, you have a badge as well?
Yeah.
Oh, great, okay. Oh, Lord, okay. Again, it's been so long. My name is Chris, recovering sex addict. This is the workshop on bottom lines. Thank you all for coming to this. And I'm glad that we're all here for the San Antonio conference. As you may know, this is I was just reading the initial part of our book, and it was just about this period of time, 30 years ago, that the founder was getting sober. So it's very fun that this is around the 30th anniversary of the founding of the fellowship. The format for this morning is... or the way that I was thinking of it was that we could talk about our bottom lines if we want to, whoever wants to share what their bottom line is, and how you came to develop that bottom line. At the same time, if you have questions about either developing a bottom line or questions about a bottom line in general, you could throw that out as well, and then it could be answered, you know, as the microphone goes around. So I just wanted to start off a bit by saying my history a little bit around this. I'm definitely qualified to be here, and I've been in recovery. I've been in sober in AA since 1978 when I was 21, and that sober time in AA provided me with about 13 years to really act out and go completely crazy in sex and relationship addiction. I didn't know it at the time, but when I was 35, so 15 years ago, I hit bottom, which is a very long story, and I was 12-stepped into SLAA, went to a meeting where a man talked about, he said that it was a men's meeting, and he said that he hadn't masturbated in 2 years. And I saw my life just flash before my eyes, and I knew that I just wished I could have died at that moment, because I thought, oh, damn, if he can do it, then that means at least I'm going to have to try it. I knew that I wouldn't succeed, but just knowing that I was going to have to try to tackle that mountain was horrifying to me. And God kind of put him in my life to meet with him. So I met with him, and I did about a one-page first step. This is how I developed my bottom line. And I wrote, I don't remember now, but something like, you know, have had anonymous sex with 1,000 men, you know, masturbated every day for 20 years, 25 years or something. Ridiculous relationship history, completely addictive, pornography constantly, fantasy, you know, every day of my life. I mean, really just one sentence. It was a very short, you know, thing, because I was able to do it in a kind of a summary style. So he told me that I probably should put masturbation on my bottom line. I had already put pornography, I mean, on my bottom line. That seemed pretty clear. And no sex outside of a committed relationship. I was not interested in, at that point, I was in such pain and such withdrawal that I was not interested in having sex with anybody. I was so angry at everybody. I just wanted to kill everybody. And that did not make for a good partnership. I didn't know how to say, I didn't know what to do about fantasy. I didn't know how to make that a bottom line. So I just said fantasy to the best of my ability. I must have heard it from somebody, I think. So that ended up being my bottom line, and still is today. No fantasy to the best of my ability, no masturbation outside of being sexual with my partner, no sex outside of a committed relationship, and no pornography. And so through the grace of God, I've been able to maintain that for 15 years. And I would never been able to do it alone. And there were a lot of times that I was begging God for help in maintaining, you know, a day of sobriety, certainly very much in the beginning. And my withdrawal lasted from about May 10th until Christmas Day. So I don't want to go through that again. So that's all pleasant. So that's how I developed my bottom line. And thinking about this workshop, it occurred to me that I think that for those of us with sex addiction, I don't know if this is true, but it may be a little bit easier, arguably, to set a bottom line because, well, coming from AA where you just don't drink, I mean, that's kind of the bottom line in AA for me anyway. Don't drink alcohol. It wasn't moderation. I don't have to drink alcohol again for the rest of my life and I'll be fine. I mean, there is no such thing as healthy drinking for me. With sex and relationship addiction, that's not the case. I mean, there is healthy sexuality, and so it's a lot more difficult. It's a much more difficult addiction. So, however, with addictive sex anyway, that bottom line for me is pretty clear cut. Anonymous sex is clearly something that is on a bottom line and just not something that I can do. Pornography, masturbation, you know, outside of being sexual with my partner, those things are pretty, for me anyway, cut and dried. When it comes to relationships, it's, I think developing a relationship bottom line personally, I think is a bit more challenging in a way in that, I could say, you know, I could put on my bottom line. I don't want to, you know, let's say, turn my will and my life over to another person. But that's just that's just a lot more gray and harder to determine, I think. Probably a perfectly good bottom line, but just challenging. I mean, grayer and hard to determine whether or not I have broken my bottom line. I'm really good with clear cut personally. So that's why I keep it in a way so that I would know that if I broke my bottom line, there wouldn't be a question. Let's see. What I think we can do, we have an hour. And what I think would be great is if, for those who, I understand if somebody doesn't want to speak into the microphone, that completely understand, or if you want to use an alias, fine. Just pass it on. But what would be great is if, you're willing to share about what your bottom line is and how it was developed, and if you have any questions about bottom lines to share with us, and that maybe it can be answered as the microphone goes around. And I guess let's see, 5, 10, 14. So I think we can certainly do about 2 minutes each. At the microphone. It may not even be that long. Maybe it'll go around more than once. Is there somebody who's willing to be a timekeeper for this workshop? Anybody who can do the 2 minutes? Oh, thank you so much. Okay. That's great. And so why don't just make sure that I've said everything. How is determined? Questions? Oh, good. Okay. Looks like I've done everything I wanted on my notes anyway. So I'll just pass the microphone on. Thank you very much.
Well, I guess somebody has to start, so I'll start. I'm Jeff, sex and love addict.
Hi, Jeff.
And I've been in this program since October of 94. I took about a 3-year sabbatical when I was cured. And so over that time, I've kind of had a lot of bottom lines. I'm going back and I'm working the steps probably for the first time. And so the bottom line behaviors that I'd identify today are because, the behavior that I've exhibited so far hasn't gotten me what I want, which is, a committed relationship that lasts because I can sustain it. And so the first bottom line behavior for me is compulsive masturbation, and usually that's to pornography. Fantasizing is another critical bottom line behavior for me, and I've come to discover recently that one that I violate quite a lot, but I try to keep mindful, is giving women that I'm attracted to, but I'm not available for, or they're not available for me, giving them the impression that I'm interested in them and kind of string them along, because that validates me. That's probably a little harder to, harder to readily recognize. You know, I know when I put in the VCR, the tape, that's easy. I know when I'm violating that bottom line. It's harder when I'm carrying on a conversation or smiling at somebody and going a little bit further with that. So thanks for listening. I'm Jeff.
Hi, my name's Alik, and I'm a sex and love addict. That's why I'm here in this workshop, because I don't really know all my bottom lines. My sexual acting out is pretty clear for me. No compulsive masturbation, no pornography, no sex out of a committed relationship. But when it comes to relationships and emotional sobriety, that's where I'm like a little iffy, wavy. I'm starting to see I'm a little codependent. That fantasy is there a lot, but I'm not sure when it's sober, when it's not, where I should draw the line or where should I start, just because I've only been in the, I've been in the program for 10 months and I just started working the steps about 4 months ago. So I've just been praying on it, but not quite sure. I was hoping that this class would give me some clarity just to see where to put the bottom lines for myself. So thanks for listening.
Okay, I'm Janie, and I just found this, a women's group about 6 weeks ago, so I'm really brand new to all this, but I know I'm very, very sick, and I know I get caught up in patterns of, believing, I get caught up in patterns of being with men that are not healthy for me. I think they love me, and then, you know, it doesn't work out from one reason or another, and it just ends up being very destructive and bad, and then I just go into complete withdrawal, and I just isolate and just become a chronic depressed person. And so I finally broke out and found the group, and so I want to learn, you know, how to identify the bottom lines. I think down deep I kind of know, but I don't know how to break out and break the cycle and not attract those sick men, because I'm sick, and you know, and I'm here because I need help. So thanks for listening.
Hi, my name is Jess. I'm a sex and love addict. I'm in this workshop because I've been reflecting. I worked with a couple sponsees, and you know, putting some, those are my bottom lines, and you know, stating the behaviors just make people act out on them, kind of, you know. And I'm just wondering, like, it feels like sometimes it's a bottom line behavior, not like stating how perfect I should be, but really identifying, oh, that behavior really hurts me, and it's a relief to identify it and say, okay, I must stop, and it really comes from within. And I've been sober for a year now of masturbating in public places and compulsive masturbation, and I've been sober for 3 years of I'm sober for 1 year, and my bottom line behavior are not being with unavailable people and not touching someone in the first month of dating, and not having sex outside of a committed relationship with at least 3 months in a committed relationship. And I've been observing lately some accessory behaviors that kind of, and I was kind of aware of it a bit, and in the late couple of days, weeks, I'm like, well, I'm kind of getting some kind of a hit out of it, and kind of, and it's starting to come from this place of, why do I need to do that, and identifying why I'm doing it and preparing to let it go. So anyway, I wanted to get more insights from coming here, so thank you very much.
I'm Cheryl. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Cheryl.
And I'm just learning what bottom line behavior is. I knew that it was the behaviors or whatever I was doing that first got me into trouble. And that being going on the internet. And for me, I think I'm more of a love addict. Anyway, something that I heard here is the learning the behaviors that keep me from being in a healthy relationship. And what I'm realizing right now is I really have to pay attention to my behaviors and how I'm feeling, and to be able to spot what behavior it was that got me into that position. So anyway, I'm fairly new into the program, and that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Sharon. I'm Melanie. I'm a sex and love addict. I don't know. I am just sort of defining my bottom line behaviors. I think I've been sober since May. I've been in the program since November. And I guess I really hit a bottom, and there was just a whole list of things that I was just like, I can't do any of this anymore. And I guess once I go back out in the dating world, I don't really know if some of those are okay, you know, like maybe flirting a little bit in order to let someone know you're interested in them. I mean, maybe that's okay, but for the first 3 months, I was like, I can't flirt with anybody. I can't do any of this. And there's a lot of games that I play, a lot of attention seeking, things like that, that just get me into all kinds of trouble. And I think those are some bottom line behaviors I need to watch out for, because there's certain behaviors that will lead me into having sex out of a committed relationship, such as playing games and flirting. And then there's also when I'm dating somebody, I get insecure, so I will flirt with everybody else to make them jealous, you know, just all kinds of like validation games that I play. Maybe that's more the love addict, more the low self-esteem, I don't know. Because there's the really obvious ones, you know, I don't want to have sex out of a committed relationship. And then there's, I guess, the accessory behaviors that I really need to define, and the acting out, or, you know, I guess I need, you know, another thing I've done is like 13-stepping, hitting on newcomers to get attention, you know, being attracted to inappropriate people that I shouldn't be involved with, and using them for attention. I mean, I guess I'm an attention junkie. I don't know. But so I guess I just really need to learn in here. One of my questions is, really, is there, I guess there's bottom line behaviors you do in withdrawal, and then it's different once you come out of withdrawal. I mean, I'm kind of curious about that. So I don't know. I'll pass it on.
My name's Earl, sex and love addict.
Hey, Earl.
I've been in recovery since February 22nd, 2000. And as I started to try to find out about my bottom line behavior, some of them were very apparent. And, you know, I think those are probably common to all of us, you know, things that we know we can't do. And I had a lot of trouble understanding for myself how to define things that kind of led me into places and situations that were difficult for me to stay out of, and it would cause me trouble in the long run. And what happened to me is that I ended up involved in a study group with 8 other men, and we used Patrick Carnes' book, Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps. And through that process of writing about all the different aspects that he has in that book, I learned a lot about what, for me, were behaviors and attitudes and thoughts and so forth that led me into places where I felt less than, and I felt needy, or felt like acting out for whatever reason. The shame would come up over, you know, my early life experiences and all kinds of different things. And I think that really helped me a lot. So as I've tried to sponsor people, what I've done is ask them to work with me about things that come up in their thoughts rather than the actual behaviors they're trying to quit. And as they've done that with me, I've learned more about myself in trying to really understand that these core shames that I had and these core difficulties that were kind of with me through my early life had made a real big difference in how I behaved in my adult life over and over and over again. My bottom lines today are no sex outside of committed relationship, no internet pornography of any kind, actually no pornography of any kind. Another thing that I can't do is be very flirtatious and engaging with women. And these have changed, actually, a lot over the time I've been sober, and I expect them to continue to change. I think those are three specific things that I can't do no matter what, because they cause me trouble in the long run. So I'm glad to be here. My name's Earl Sex and Love Addict.
Thanks, Earl. I'm
Stuart, Sex and Love Addict.
Hi, Stuart.
And I've been thinking of analogies for this, and the one that comes to mind is, you know, there's two ways to kill a lobster. One is you get a pot of boiling water really hot, throw the lobster in and slap the top over it, and the lobster's going to try and fight for its life. The other way is to put the lobster in a pot of sort of lukewarm water and then turn the heat up slowly. And I've got bottom lines that are the boiling pot of, which are easy for me to figure out. I shouldn't go in there. You know, and then I have behaviors that are in the lukewarm pot. And so in the first pot, there were things when I first got in the program 5 years ago I knew were, you know, had to be off limits. You know, masturbation, sex outside of my marriage at that point, now committed relationship, and things like that. It's figuring out, you know, when I'm in that pot of water that's slowly inching up, that's become a problem for me. And so I really got to a point where I kept going back to these behaviors, online dating, flirting, you know, gaming for phone numbers or email addresses, going to places where that behavior is sort of encouraged. And stuff like that, and I finally was able to label it as seeking out emotional or romantic intrigue. So I never sort of connected my behaviors to the intrigue, and it's been a rocky road because every time something comes up in my life that causes me pain, and it doesn't necessarily be relationship driven. It can be food driven. It can be someone else talking about core shame driven. It can be financial issues. It can be family of origin stuff that's unresolved. I reach back, you know, I jump into that pot of lukewarm water and wait until it gets so hot, you know, and if you've ever seen a crustacean in one of those pots, they never even know, you know, they don't even know to ask for help. And so, you know, part of the process for me has been recognizing, I've discovered that my body will tell me when to ask for help, and trying to get that before I jump in the pot is better for me than after I jump in the pot. So, so my bottom line has evolved from, you know, the sort of black and white things that are typical of a lot of people I've talked to in the program of a sex addict. And now I'm getting into more of the codependence and love addiction things of, you know, staying away from situations that, you know, excessive, and really any flirting or, you know, the gaminess, the fantasy. And I've also discovered that, you know, some fantasy is natural. It's the sort of obsessive fantasy, the crazy fantasy that I need to be very wary of. So. Thanks, Sir. Sex and Love Addict.
Thanks, Derek.
I'm a sex and love addict. And some of the, for me, the bottom line behaviors of entering into a relationship behind a wall of seduction and having sex outside of a committed relationship, those are fairly easy. But the reason I'm here for this workshop is to, one of the things I'm struggling with right now is something that's a little bit more unique to me anyway. About 8 months ago, I had prostate cancer surgery, and so I have no prostate anymore. I was opened up and replumbed, and part of the complications of prostate surgery are incontinence and the inability to have an erection. And there's surgeries that help with that. And right now, masturbation has never been a big part of my sex addiction in the past decades. But now, masturbation, because I am not sexually active with anyone else, it's an important part of, if you will, physical therapy. And so if I want to have a active, healthy sexual relationship in the future, and I hope I have several decades left, then it's important for me to kind of have physical therapy and to masturbate. And so is that okay? Is it okay to do it with fantasy? Is it okay to do it with unhealthy fantasy? What if I'm not healthy enough to do it any other way? And so there is, I'm curious in my own mind, and that's where my bottom lines develop, as to what is healthy for me, what is a bottom line behavior that is okay or not okay, do the means justify the ends, those kinds of questions, and that's why I'm here.
Hi, I'm a sex and love addict. For me, it was really easier to define in the early stages kind of things related around sex. No sex in public places, no anonymous sex, no voyeuring guys at my gym, things like that. What has gotten more complicated and difficult are the behaviors around romance and love and emotion. And I think of two things. Earlier in sobriety, I would go out to a club with friends and I would meet a guy I was attracted to and we would talk. And then I would decide not to go home with him. And for me, that was sort of a victory because it was like, oh, I'm not acting out sexually. But then a friend lovingly pointed out, yeah, but aren't you kind of using that guy for an ego stroke? Because there was sort of the sense there of like, he liked me, he was really attracted to me. If I wanted to push this, I could make this happen, but I'm going to be good. So I had to kind of look at my motives and see that sometimes that could be self-centered. I also know that I didn't get into the online world for a long time because I saw friends in AA who got sucked into kind of sex sites, and I didn't want that, and I know I had an addictive personality. But I decided to go on a kind of website to kind of meet people to date romantically, not to hook up. And so I posted my profile, and I kind of started getting lots of responses. And I kind of realized, like, I was getting a little rush every time the message would come through. And it would be like, you have a flirt, or you have a message. Like, I would get really excited. And that sort of became a way to get validation. And so I've taken that add down just because I'm confused about that, because I'm aware that I get really into people being attracted to me and I feel like I'm worth it. And I don't know if that's acting out sexually or not, or if that should be my bottom line. Maybe it's just tricky and difficult and I have to monitor it. The other thing I'm kind of struggling with right now is initially sexual things were what was in the bottom line. But I can put myself in situations in which I'm looking for an opportunity to have sex, but I'm not doing that. And so I decided to put one or two of those behaviors in my kind of bottom line area. But that was really, sometimes I get confused or pissed off because I'm kind of like, I'm not having sex. So what's the problem? And am I making this so rigid? Because what would happen is so say I would go to a place where there might be the possibility for sex, but not have sex. Then I'd be like, I need to pick up a desire chip. But then that sort of felt like, okay, you're never going to get any links of sobriety. So negotiating that whole spectrum around how much goes in your bottom line. So that's the question I'm struggling with.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gordy. I'm definitely a sex and love addict. And I guess when I first got into SLA, it was obvious that the bottom line stuff that I needed to list, at least initially, before I actually got with a sponsor and was able to start looking at some of this stuff, was just some of the illegal behavior that I was getting involved with, you know. And I mean, at least I could start someplace. But I know today that it's not my place to identify what my bottom lines are by myself. I had so much self-hate in disgust, and I really thought I was some type of monster when I came here. And so if I were allowed to sit down and list my bottom line behaviors, I would list so many. So, you know, it's like I would be using the bottom line idea as an effort to just beat myself up, you know, even more. And of course it would be unachievable. So I'd be busting my bottom line at any, you know, I mean, I'd, you know, have vague stuff on there, like, you know, no thinking about this or that. Well, you know, I can't do anything about thoughts I have until I think them. Then I can do something about them. Well, if I have not to think about something on my bottom line, I'm screwed. I have no control over that, you know, that deal. And the other thing for me too today is that my bottom lines, you know, it's real easy for me to look at the bottom line idea as an effort in control. It's like I'm listing these things to say that these are the behaviors I'm not going to do. Well, the truth is if I could identify the behaviors I wasn't going to do and then not do them, I would have done it a long time ago. you know, I don't have control over these behaviors. I'm an addict. I don't have control over this. But what I can do today is I can say, these are the things that I'm going to be accountable for the first time in my life. If I do these things, or if I'm doing anything that's going to get me towards doing these things, I'm responsible for it. I need to tell somebody. I need to talk to somebody about it. And by doing that, you know, I really, I think, took that idea that I need to control these things out of the picture, because I don't. I just need to be responsible for them, and I need to share them with somebody, and they, and no more secrets. And so that's, you know, so my bottom lines are like, you know, no downloading illegal stuff off the internet, no porn, you know, no sex outside my committed relationship, and no illegal stuff at all. So thank you.
Thanks, Gordy.
My name is Deborah, and I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Deborah.
I'm new to the program. I've been to like 3 meetings, and like umpteen years ago, I had went to my first SLA meeting, and it was like, these people are weird. But I feel at home, but I'm kind of lost at words because I'm trying to define my bottom line from, I guess, as childhood coming up. I was in an abusive family. And it used to be hard for me to say this, but, you know, being sexually abused as a child, it's passed on. But by the grace of God, and I'm also, 22 years sober, I know that I don't have to act on those, act out my childhood. I guess my question is, how do you define that bottom line? Because I used to write a lot of stuff, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, I don't want to pass it on to my children. Instead of writing it out, like, don't want nobody reading this paper, they're going to lock me up, you know. Just now getting my life together. And anyway, I was sharing with the therapist, and it came out somehow, you know, they said, well, we got to report this. But, you know, being as it was 30 years ago, and anyway, make a long story short, CPS entered the picture and went to my 2 grandsons' school and talked to them, but didn't ask them anything. You know, just, it's like, you know, I told them, you know, if you do a character check of all the people that are in my life, you know, friends I've known for 20 years, sponsors, spiritual advisors, you know, you would go look at somebody who's really hurting somebody, you know. But anyway, I thank y'all for your honesty, and if anybody would talk to me after the meeting or sometime later through the day, I'd appreciate it, because it's making me binge the shame. And damn it, I usually don't wear makeup. And because I've been crying, you know, and all this stuff, and I put mascara on because I'm not going to cry today. I'm not going to mess it up. But I'll just have to put it on again. Thank y'all.
Thank you. A few folks joined us late, and welcome. Just wanted to see, is there any member of the media here? No? Okay. And I'll take time while I'm sharing to pass these evaluations out. Maybe I was supposed to pass them out at the beginning. I can't quite tell. What I'm hearing anyway is a number of things that are helpful for me. It appears as if there are some behaviors that are necessary. That are easier to determine. But then there are a number that are gray, that are just pretty difficult to kind of determine. And I've also been reminded that I needed to work with, the gentleman wasn't my sponsor, but I needed to work with somebody to develop my bottom lines, somebody who had you know, anybody had more sobriety than I did at that time, but somebody who had a bit of sobriety who knew how this worked, because I didn't know, I didn't know how to set bottom lines. And there's also the concept too, that there may be, at least with masturbation, there may be such a thing as healthy masturbation that works for folks. All I know is that for me, it doesn't work. So that's why I have to put it on my bottom line. So that's an area that's also, you know, having to develop that may be a challenge. One thing that I did want to mention too was that there are some areas, at least of the country, maybe the world, that have what's called an inner circle. I don't understand quite how it works. I don't know it well enough, but there, like for me, my inner circle, if I have it correct, are the real hardcore things: porn, you know, sex outside of a committed relationship. And then there, maybe it's an outer circle, and those may be the accessory things. For example, for me, I don't have on my bottom line, like going into, you know, going into talking to somebody or pursuing a friendship with somebody who triggers me wanting to be with them. I mean, I don't have that on my bottom line, but that's a behavior that I know would not do me any good. I mean, as was spoken about last night, if there is a prior to being in a relationship, if there was somebody who absolutely triggered me and I thought, now he's the man for me, I know now, with God's help, to kind of run the other way and to wish him well, because I'll be crazy. And and also was mentioned about stopping things that cause me pain, that now cause me pain. I mean, there were maybe an initial rush, but feeling good, but they eventually caused me pain. So that's another thing that has helped me develop bottom lines. And lastly, my bottom lines have changed. Or my bottom line changed again when I first came into the program. It was no dating. I should say it was no sex outs, no sex period, and because I hated everybody. As I got sober, I eventually changed to no sex outside of a committed relationship. And so bottom lines do change, or mine at least has changed. So I think we have time for okay. I think we may want to go. May not need to be timed, but if we could keep it somewhat brief, we have another 15 minutes before I got that right? Yeah, 15 minutes before we need to do whatever other housekeeping we have to wrap up. But this is really turning into a great workshop for me. Thank you.
I'm Peter. I'm a sex and love addict. When I came into the program, I was predominantly acting out in my sex addiction. I hadn't been in a relationship for a while and had actually done a lot of work around boundaries and things like that, and was learning what a bad relationship was. I bottomed out, leaving my son in a hotel room while I went and acted out in a massage parlor 2 nights in a row in a foreign country. And what got me in here was it finally hit me that there was more to the world than me, and it took my children to do this. Because evidently I wasn't taking care of myself, but when I realized that my behavior was going to affect my family, that's when I bottomed and came in. So my bottom lines were, I was doing a lot of internet porn. That went on the bottom line, no dating, no sex. And the masturbation thing was really, really tough. And I remember doing a month, and that was tough. And then I did 3 months, and that was really tough. And what I discovered was that at the end of the 3 months, that I was able to masturbate without fantasy, because it had been so long, because there was a physical thing going on there. But the next time, fantasy started to come in. By the third time, I was using fantasy again. And a huge turnaround for me about that was a Fellowship World Services tape on voyeurism. And even though I predominantly get my hit visually, I never considered myself a voyeur. I had a typical misunderstanding of what voyeurism was, because I didn't do any peeking or anything. But when I found out that voyeurism was really just getting it through the eyes, I realized that that was how I acted out. And what I really, really liked from this workshop was the concept that if I stopped masturbating, then all of the voyeurism I was doing during the day was for nothing, because I wasn't going to use it later on. It was a really powerful thing for me because I spent a good part of my day building my video library, building the picture library that I would use later on. And I had movies from 20, 30 years ago. And when I finally stopped masturbating, there was no point in collecting pictures and movies during the day anymore. The reason was just gone. And so the behavior would be there, the tendency would be there, and then I'd go, wait a minute, what am I going to do with this anyway? So that helped a lot. What's really been ongoing difficult for me is that groove is still there. And on my bottom line are things like, you know, not following somebody, not pursuing somebody, the looking into the car next to me, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the I have to use the 3-second rule all the time. And of course, I'm one of those people, when I first heard the 3-second rule, it's like, well, if I divide it up. Yeah, if I divide it up into milliseconds, I could do this all day long on 3 seconds. I can just keep looking a little bit. And I mean, that actually went through my head. It was crazy. So it is really, really difficult to drop the looking. And not stalking, just looking, just the second look in the grocery store. It's very, very difficult. But I see it is my dashboard now. When I'm centered and when I'm taking care of myself and when things are pretty good, I don't look. And then all of a sudden I find myself looking. So now it's like a little oil warning light. It's like, okay, what's going on? You know, sometimes I can unwind it and sometimes I can't. As far as bottom lines across the board, I've just started asking myself recently what makes me suffer and what doesn't. And it's not just in sex and love, it's other stuff too. I mean, I have to ask a really honest question. If I do this, will I suffer more or will I suffer less? And the fact that I'm asking myself that is new, because I didn't really used to care whether I suffered or not as long as I got the hit that I wanted. But I did find that stopping the behavior stopped the entire machine that was feeding the behavior. And that was really valuable to me. Thanks.
I'm Jazz. I'm a sex and love addict. Just wanted to talk about the inner circle a bit, because I've heard about that too, and I made the exercise at once, and it just felt like, well, if I put my core bottom line behavior in the middle, it's just like where I want to aim, you know? So I started to work on I'm going to put my core bottom line behavior on the outside circle and put my top lines in the middle. Okay, I want to have a spiritual life. I want to take care of my relationships. I want to do meeting service, health good. I mean, eat good, sleep good, you know? That's my core. That's where I aim. And then I wanted to put on the other circle all the little things that could lead me to, and the emotional behavior, because I do have all the time those thoughts. I do have all the time those tendency to have those codependent love addict behaviors. And when I'm aware, I let go. So in the outer circle. So anyway, that's just a thought of how I'm thinking of working my behaviors, because it's all about awareness. And I really appreciate it. Thank you for sharing the idea that I can't control. It's good to remind me I can't control. I can just be aware, be accountable, and pray and do my step work, and it will go by the grace of God. So thank you very much.
Again, my name is Gordy. I'm definitely a sex and love addict. And I wanted to mention something about the bullseye, too. That's my home group, the Oakland Men's Group in Dallas. And that's a lot of us have used that concept to develop our bottom lines. And it is like a bullseye. It has, you know, at least the form we use has, you know, in the center has the bottom line. And then there's an outer ring, which is the danger zone stuff, which is the stuff that is not, you know, one, it can't be concrete enough for me to put on my bottom line. Because if I put anything gray on my bottom line, then it's really a setup. Because my addiction will like to rationalize or justify or, you know, whatever. So if it's gray, I'm asking myself, well, did I break my bottom line or didn't I? Or, you know, and I need something concrete that I can say when I break my bottom line, it's like, yes, I did. There's no question. There's no, well, I wonder if I did, you know, and so I need to put that stuff in my bottom line. So then the danger zone is the stuff that could lead me to that. You know, the triggers that are that are telling me I'm in a dangerous place when I'm cruising more at a restaurant and things like that. And then the other neat thing for me was that, you know, outside of that is a healthy zone. That's the positive stuff I do to keep me in recovery, like going to meetings, meeting with my sponsor, meeting with sponsees, you know, doing the steps. And then the last thing is there's like on the corner of this page, there's like, you know, goals. And those are like the top line things, because it's like, you know, I felt like a monster when I came in here. If I still felt like a monster now, I don't think I'd stay. You know, I would have just killed myself. That's where I was at just before I got here. I mean, I was out in the middle of the woods, you know, ready to just off myself because I felt like I was such a disgusting monster. I don't feel that way today. You know, I don't feel that way. And it's because of those top line things, because of those goals, improving the relationship with my kids, with my partner, you know, working through the fourth and fifth step. And so I like that. So I don't, you know, I know that form's not like a conference approved form, but that was a good way for me to be able to get clear idea what my bottom line's about. And then, like I said, I, you know, had to work with a sponsor on it because, you know, I would have loved to just put as much shit on it as I could. And the other thing too is that my bottom line, it is like a living document. I mean, it changes, you know, and I every time I have to change it, I am risking having to get another desire chip. But so be it. I mean, who gives a shit? You know, I am not suicidal today. I don't hate myself today. So it really doesn't matter, you know, if I have a desire chip from yesterday or if I've been in recovery for 3 years. So thank you.
Does anybody have any feedback on the issue of a health matter that I've also been close to facing anyway, where masturbation's on my bottom line, and there may be other health issues. I just don't know if this is the one that I'm aware of. However, for health reasons, there may be reasons to, for example, in this case, to masturbate. Are there any thoughts about that or how to deal with that? Great. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Peter. Excuse me, still a sex and love addict. When I was trying to justify masturbation, it was really funny. I wasn't really great at self-care, but boy, I was on the internet for hours trying to find every medical reason why I needed to keep masturbating. And I mean, it was really weird. I was really building a case for it. And then I started talking to some guys in the program who, I mean, I was trying to get 90 days. We had a guy who hadn't masturbated in 7 years and he was out of a relationship. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. When I was earlier, had problems with prostate stuff. And it scared me. But I did find out that for me, personally, it was justification. And I just found out physically that your body takes care of itself and it's okay. And what it was doing to me to continue masturbating was probably indirectly hurting me more physically than the harm of not. And so for me personally, I did use it as a justification. And unfortunately, any doctor that you go to will sit you down and say, you know, you need to be doing this. It's a good thing to do. But, you know, if you have food compulsions, you can't listen to the advice that you get from people. If you are an alcoholic, you can't listen to the fact that two glasses of wine are healthy for you. So I have to take all that with a grain of salt.
Earl, sex and love addict.
When I initially came into recovery, masturbation was on my bottom line, and actually stayed there for quite a long time. And I, I've been living alone and everything since I've been in recovery. And what I found out, though, is the masturbation, as it time went on, I became really kind of anorexic about the whole idea of being sexual and being a sexual being. And I did some work in therapy around that and found out that really, at that point, it was probably unhealthy for me not to be masturbating naturally or normally like many people do. And so what I had to do is find a way to begin masturbating again. And it was not an easy thing to do. I had been compulsively not masturbating for so long that I had difficulty getting an erection. I had difficulty with the whole idea of masturbation and so forth. So I think on balance, what seems to be okay for me, and I think probably is maybe kind of natural and normal, is there is a period of time where no masturbation was really good for me. And then there was a period of time when no masturbation was probably not good for me. And finding that balance is something that recovery can bring us, I think, as spiritual and emotional human beings. And that's what I would advocate to my sponsees, and I have done that when the questions come up. So that's my experience, oral sex with that.
Oops. Okay.
For me, with the bottom line, or developing it, I'm so have a lot of fear around kind of playing with the bottom line. But as actually has been discussed, for me, I went about 8 to 9 years before I had sex at all, no masturbation or anything, prior to finally meeting somebody and that I could get into a relationship with. I thought I was never going to have sex again. But with a health issue, I don't know. I don't know what I would do, whether it's masturbation or something else. That's a real tough question, I think. It appears as if we're at about the 5-minute stage. So what I'd like to do is I didn't see it before that I do need to pass out these evaluations. Or did we get them?
You did.
Oh, yes. Oh, they're just okay. Didn't realize it. Excellent. Thank you, everybody. Justin. Oh, sure.
Thank you. Just like to share the process for taking off a bottom line behavior of my list that my sponsor is working with is doing the clarity exercise. So it's like I state, okay, taking off this bottom line behavior, and I write the pros and cons. I write my motivations, my expectations, my fears, my consequences, the consequences of that. And then asking myself, am I trying to avoid the fear? Am I able to live with the consequences? And I think there's another question I forgot. But anyway, just, you know, to not say, okay, on the spur of the moment, I'm taking it off. Just taking the time to write it, read it to someone else, my sponsor, and wait at least 24 hours to have God make his job in my awareness. So just wanted to share that.
Okay. Has everybody received a release to sign for being in this workshop? Okay, then if you could leave that in your evaluation on your chair when you leave, that would be great. Let's see. Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for this workshop. This has been really great. I kind of wish it could go on longer because I'm really learning a lot and it's very helpful. And I've also learned about how determining bottom lines is really not necessarily all that easy, and and then determining what they should be as time goes on is also challenging. So that's been very, very helpful. Let's see. Okay, then I am to read this. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Therefore, what you hear here, who you see here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Okay, let us now close with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer.
Oh, hand holding is optional. Stand is optional. Forget it's such a reflex.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back, it works if you work it.
Worth it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.